kids can head on out. All right. Man. Some good stuff right there. I'm in love with the topic tonight, but I feel like it's pretty much almost inevitably going to be let down after that music set. So just, you know, prepare yourself to be disappointed, but that's okay. Tonight, we're still in the Sermon on the Mount in the lectionary text. We're still in Matthew 5. Apparently, I did something wrong and didn't save it. That's why none of the scriptures were showing up there, which also means it won't show up while I'm talking. So if you want to grab one of the blue Bibles in the pew, or if you brought your Bible with you, I'll give you reference numbers, try to give you page numbers to follow along. Although it may even be a different version in the pew, so good luck. Anyways, if it's not a challenge, you don't really want it. So today we're going to talk through what is maybe the most famous, at least part of it, is some of the most famous parts of the Sermon on the Mount. One of the most oft quoted, at least partially quoted, parts of the Sermon on the Mount. It's kind of become... In fact, there's a lot of people that know the term eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, that have no idea it comes from the Bible. Have no idea where the origin is, and it gets quoted a lot and used a lot in regards to kind of the world and justice and all these kind of things. And it is amazing how often you hear the quote, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, which is only half of what Jesus teaches. In fact, I was on a mission trip in Northern Ireland trying to do community building stuff with the Catholic communities and the Protestant communities, who really don't like each other in Northern Ireland. It's come a long way since I was there. But there was legitimate terrorist stuff going on between the two different groups. And I got really full of myself on my theology and got an argument. It was an argument. We were doing like stuff on the street to kind of talk to people and, you know, preach and that kind of stuff on the street. And someone came up to me and they were upset about something I said. And they brought up eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. And they were advocating essentially terrorism towards Catholics. And I said, oh, you are misquoting that. And I brought my Bible, da 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 da. And I really told him. I was feeling great about myself. Then he got real red in the face, he and his two friends, and he was a lot bigger than me, and he said, so if I hit you on the right cheek, are you going to give me the left cheek too? And that's when I went, I really wish I'd been a little kinder in the way I presented this to you right now. And I said to him, honestly, if you hit me on my cheek, I'm probably not getting up based on the way you look and the size I am. And he backed off, although he did linger long enough to just... make me need a change of underwear. So it was it's one of those teachings that you get into, and a lot of people talk about it. But again, they always only kind of quote half the verse. If you quote the full verse, it's one of those things that feels so out of touch and so difficult and so unrealistic that it's easier just to kind of pass by it or only mention half of it. And so that's what you get. You get a lot of people just kind of saying, well, the Bible says eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, and they kind of end it right there. But the truth is, if that's all that Jesus had said, well, we wouldn't need Jesus to say that, right? That'd be like Jesus coming out in favor of, you know, breathing. We got that. We understand that just kind of comes natural to us here. But what Jesus endorses instead is something very, very different. Jesus here seems to be demonstrating a desire to change the entire conversation about enemies and violence altogether. We tend to think about violence in two ways, generally speaking. We tend to think about it either as kind of fight fire with fire or be completely passive in the face of violence, right? So either it's a fight fire with fire, so again, that's eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. Someone punches me, I punch back. Hopefully I punch harder. And it is basically, it's competition. It's you are violent towards me, I'm violent back to you, and one of us is going to win and one of us is going to lose, right? So this is the most natural kind of response to things. This is how kind of the world typically works. So it's fight fire with fire. Or the second one is just a passivity. Hey man, I'm a lover, I'm not a fighter. So you punch me, I just lay down and pray it stops quick, and we just call it a day, and I don't do anything about it, right? So you kind of have the fight back, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth kind of thing, or the complete, you know, passivity. And there's been plenty of theology throughout the years, and plenty of Jesus, by what people teach, Jesus endorsing both of those things. by proof texting different verses and kind of talking about Jesus. And I would argue that Jesus is not endorsing either of those things. And this passage is an important one for us to view because there's this kind of third, more difficult way that Jesus is endorsing to me. Because the problem with those two options, while they seem polar opposites and they seem like very different things, the problem with those two options is both allow violence, and they allow the attacker in particular to define the parameters, to define the rules of the game, right? They both allow the attacker to define the parameters, and neither of them is really redemptive, right? And we always have to remember this when as a follower of Jesus, all and those of you who are going through the Reconcile study, you kind of know that he's getting at this in that book, that there is no separating reconciliation, redemption and reconciliation from the Christian life or the Christian message. If we're doing something as Christians that is working against reconciliation, working against redemption, then it's not of Jesus. We've misunderstood something. And so the fact that it allows the attacker to set the rules, and the fact that there's no redemptive options in either of those things, really, Jesus instead puts forward this other way. And if we look at it, you realize in these texts, Jesus is not passive, nor is he the aggressor. And he leaves space, and he does things in such a way that there's potentially redemptive and reconciliatory kind of things that can happen. And it doesn't accept the premise of the offender. The offender doesn't get to make the rules. You just play by different rules no matter what they say you're going to do. So Jesus proposes this kind of disruptive love. This kind of activity and posture that just throws a wrench into the entire system, right? And it's hard to do that, and it's a weird process to be a part of. Now strap in for a second. Let me finish this part because some of you are going to pull back real quick when I say this. Think about politics in the last 3 months or so, particularly. We now have a president who, like him or hate him, and we won't talk about that because you've almost certainly got one of the two really strong opinions. It seems like no one's kind of like I'm either here nor there. But our current president, he's a disruptor. Now, you may think that's a terrible thing, you may think that's the worst thing that could possibly happen, or you may be celebrating, right? But he is a disruptor. He has refused to play by the rules, right? This is how you talk during to someone else that you're competing against in an election. This is what you can say and can't say. This is how you do treat the press or don't treat. And he just has said no to all that. It doesn't matter how much everyone stamps their feet and says, no, you can't do that. He goes, yes, I can, and he does it anyways, right? And I've heard things many people say. And these are not people that are kind of like easily flustered. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what country I live in right now. Like things are just like so disorienting, right? Now again, you may think that's a great thing. You may be one of those people. And I think that's very strategic. If not from him, at least from the people. There's a kind of political philosophy behind the whole just disrupt the whole system and see what happens, right? You may agree or disagree with that. But he's definitely done that, right? And all of us. People are just feeling a little weird and insecure, and they're not sure what to do, right? It just kind of throws everything off. And so, that'll be the only comparison between our president and Jesus I have tonight. But I'm not really comparing those two. He wouldn't want me to do that any more than I would want him to do that with me. So, but it's this idea of disruption. Like, I don't accept the premise of the relationship. I don't accept the premise of what we're doing, right? I don't go along with it. And so, I think what Jesus teaches here gets at what is such an essential and difficult part of what Jesus represented and taught that it, as you get into it, it makes sense why it's so roundly ignored. We never really tackled these passages in my church growing up. We never really, really tackled them. And if you read through them, I think you can understand why. Let's go ahead and read through them. We're in Matthew 5, verses 21 through 22, page 1174 on that blue Bible if you want to read along. If not, I'll do my best to actually read the words correctly. We're in 38 through 48. You have heard that it was said, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. So here you see kind of a division of things. The first three relate to someone who has power over me, behaving in a way that you know, it's talked about how I react. The next two are one that I kind of have power over, right? They need something from me. And you'll see kind of the consistency of behavior between those two different groups of people. To be honest, we're going to talk mostly about those first three, not those second two, those last two, because the last two are just come easier. But verse 43, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. So here you have Jesus kind of right off the bat. Jesus is obviously, and I hope this kind of, we don't have to go too far into this. We can all accept this premise. Jesus is anti-evil. You guys go with me on that? Okay. So Jesus is anti-evil, right? He's anti-evil, and yet he says, do not resist evil. Which seems like he's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth here, right? So are we anti-evil or are we not resisting evil? And so I want you to think of it in this way. Here's how I think about it. Think of it like judo or like Brazilian jiu-jitsu or like this kind of martial arts kind of thing where it's not a matter of overpowering the person, but it's a matter of letting basically using their own force against them, right? So if you ever got into those, you know, mixed martial arts kind of things, like way back in the day when that first came out, and you used to have to go to Blockbuster to get the tape once a year to see it, which is what we did in college because we'd never seen anything like that. We thought it was the greatest thing ever. And back in those days, they didn't have weight classes. They didn't have styles that fought each other. It was like you would have a 150-pound karate guy fighting literally like a 650-pound sumo wrestler. It was insane. Didn't make any sense at all. And so you'd have these bizarre things. And then they had this one guy that came in, Royce Gracie was his name, who was into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And he looked like a lot of your dads, you know, and like these guys would just be like ripped up and all, you know, crazy looking. And he'd come walking into the room and he'd have like the gi on. It looked like it didn't really fit. It looked like a kid in his first day of karate class. And he'd get out there and like he would just kind of walk around and they would swing at him and punch. He'd kind of take a little bit of a punch. And then he would just grab him. Put both arms and legs around him, right? There was this whole system they had developed where once he got that little kind of monkey hold on you, whatever you did to hurt him ended up hurting you. So you swing this arm and suddenly this arm is bent behind your back and he's got it between his legs and you're tapping out or your arm's gonna break. Like, it was amazing. And so this guy, in fact, it was horrible because it was not fun to watch at all. It was just two guys hugging on the ground for a half an hour until someone tapped out, you know? And you're like, what happened to, the, you know, I wanna see, you know, blood sport here. So it's this idea of kind of somehow, as opposed to overpowering someone, you're basically almost using their own thing against them in this way. And Jesus kind of starts off as do not resist evil, right? And then he goes into these three examples. And I want to unpack these three examples because there's very kind of specific kind of ties to these situations. They just sound like kind of maybe random situations, but there's very kind of specific things. And so the first one is if someone slaps you on the right cheek, you know, then offer them also your left. So actually, I'm going to bring up a volunteer for this one. I need someone to slap. Alan, will you come up? No, I'm not really going to slap you. No, seriously, though, come on. All right, I promise, I won't slap you. Okay, so Alan, your right cheek is which cheek? This one, okay. So just to give you a little bit of background on the kind of the culture of the day, okay? So let's say Alan and I are in a fight or whatever. Actually, in this situation, it's most likely going to be that maybe I'm a Roman, he's a Jew, I can do whatever I want to him, but he can't respond, otherwise he's going to die, right? And so here's something you should know about the culture of the time. The left hand was a big no-no back in those times, right? You don't do anything with the left hand kind of interacting with people. The left hand is used for sanitary purposes. So it is not, so you don't eat with your left hand, you don't shake hands with your left hand. The left hand is kind of the no-go. Not to mention that most people are not left-handed and so they're probably not going to hit with that hand, but they don't use it. So just take the left hand out of the equation. So if I'm hitting Alan with my right hand and I'm hitting his right cheek, that's kind of a tough thing to do, right? I mean, it's hard to kind of, you know, punch like that. So what kind of hit is going to happen at this point? It's going to be a backhanded hit, right? That's how my right hand hits his right cheek. So in this case, a backhanded slap, this is, you can go ahead and sit down. I just want to. I just always wanted to pretend to slap you. I don't know what it is. So in this instance, this is not someone trying to knock someone out. This is more about humiliation than it is about inflicting harm, right? If I want to inflict harm on Alan, I'm going for his left cheek. I'm gonna ball up my fist and I'm gonna hit him in the left cheek, right? So when Jesus says they hit you on the right cheek, the image is of someone belittling you, someone calling you less than them, less than human, right? And so they backhand, they hit that left cheek. And then Jesus says, at that point, when they hit you on the left cheek, give them also the left. So when you demean me, when you treat me like I'm less than you, when you casually try to humiliate me, you stand up. You don't hit back. You stand up, so it's nonviolent, but it's not passive either, right? Passive means I stay on the ground, I just take it, and I don't do anything. You stand up, and you turn the other cheek. And what that means is, you can hit me, but you're going to hit me like the person I am. You're going to hit me like an equal, right? So it's nonviolent, absolutely. You're not swinging back, but it is not passive. And I want you to think about the mindset there and what that does to the attacker. If I'm just trying to humiliate you, if I'm just trying to put you down and act like you're less than me, and I give you a smack across the cheek with the back of my hand, and then you stand up and you say, go ahead, hit this one too. Do you feel how that changes the dynamic of what's going on there? I'm not returning fire for fire. I'm not passive. But I'm not letting you determine who I am. You don't get to treat me like I'm not a child of God. I am. You don't get to treat me like I'm not someone that you have to respect. You have to respect. You can hit me. You can hit me again. But you're going to hit me like an equal. See, so it's this very different kind of third way of doing things, right? And I used to do improv theater a lot. In improv theater, there's the first rule of improv theater is called yes and. And it works like this. In yes and, what that means is, so improv theater, we're making up something on the spot. And if after I slapped Alan, we did an improv scene together, what would happen is if we're doing a scene together, we're making up something on the spot, the audience says, you guys are at Disney World and it's your first time at Disney World. So we haven't talked, we don't know what this is gonna be about. We just 3, 2, 1, start acting out a scene, right? Well, we always do yes and. We don't know, do like, no, comma, but we do yes and. So if in my mind I think, okay, we're brothers and we're 8 years old and it's our first time at Disney World and we're gonna be really excited. And in Alan's brain, he thinks, okay, this is my son. I've been here 1,000 times. This is his first time, so he's having fun and I'm miserable. And we both have these things in our mind. We haven't talked ahead of time, right? And he gets up and they say, 3, 2, 1, start the scene. And he goes, okay, son. I don't go, no, we're brothers. Because I just killed the scene, right? We can't go anywhere now. You never say no, right? You always say yes and. So at that point, I adjust. I wanted to be brothers, but we're obviously not brothers, right? And so they also call this the lemming rule, which is lemmings it's a myth. They don't really do it. They commit mass suicide. If one runs off the cliff, the whole group runs off behind them. We call it the lemming rule. So if you're going over the cliff, I'm following you. That's just, even if I think it's a terrible idea, I'm going, right? And that's what makes for these scenes, that's what makes you able to build a story and not just end the story right there. I say yes and. Now he may be the dad in his mind. He says, all right, son, welcome to your first day at Disney World. And he in his mind, he may think he's been there 1,000 times and he didn't want to be there. And I'll go, don't act like you're not more excited than me. I mean, you're wearing the entire outfit. Well, now he's got to say, he can't go, no, I've been here 1,000 times and I hate it. Scene's done, right? He's going to go, well, it's true. I have, you know, my father wore this outfit and his father before him. And this is, you know, we've always dressed like, you know, Mickey Mouse and dreamed of being, I mean, then we keep building. It's yes and, yes and, yes and, right? It's just, there's actually a lot of theology to that, by the way, that's, I think, in regards to God's will and everything. I'll get into another time, or maybe write a book on improv theology, I don't know. But the point being that in this situation, it's almost like this kind of loving yes and kind of thing. It's like, you know, I'm not gonna overpower you and tell you can't hit me in this situation, that the soldier can't hit me. Yes, but I'm gonna add to it, right? And. We're going to move this thing. I'm going to move this thing forward. I'm not going to let you set the parameters on things. So it's that you have this turn the other cheek idea. Next one. If they take your, and the word here is shaitan, I think is how you say it, give them also your coat. Here's another one that's lost if you don't kind of understand it. I'm definitely not asking Alan up for this one. Basically, the chiton, what they say there is the garment that you wear closest to your skin, is what it says. So in parlance of what we'd have today, it's your underwear. That's what it is, right? It's kind of the undergarment. Now back in those days, you maybe had two layers, right? A coat on top of that. And so in this situation, it basically says if they're suing you for your underwear, just for today's parlance, I think we can go ahead and say it that way. So one, this is already, it's kind of an absurd situation, right? Because he's talking to mostly poor people who are mostly going to be taken to court and sued by those who have power over them and can take things from them kind of almost at will. And so the idea that, you know, we've heard, man, he's going to sue the pants off that guy. It's this kind of idea, right? I mean, it's this idea that they're literally taking your underwear. And it says, if they sue you for it, we're standing in the court. And Alan's suing me for my underwear, right? And you can understand, again, they're wearing two layers. It says, give them your coat also. Well, how does that leave me? That leaves me naked, right? And a couple things. There's biblical injunctions in Exodus and Deuteronomy that says you cannot take someone's coat, even if they owe you everything. There's like a thing where there's one, like you can have it during the day, but you have to give it back at night so they can sleep in at night. But there's this thing of like, it's unrighteous to take someone's outer garment. They gotta have to have something to cover up with, right? But I mean, think about the absurdity of that image. It's like, I'm gonna sue you for underwear. Okay, well here, just take my coat too. And then suddenly you're standing next to him naked. Now who's embarrassed? I mean, how do you embarrass someone that willingly gets naked in front of you, right? Don't answer that, and I don't wanna know any stories or examples of friends you have. But you're forcing the person to see you for who you are and exactly what they are doing, right? If I am wealthy and I'm taking a poor person to court and I'm suing them for the underwear and they just take off everything and stand there naked in court, who's ashamed now? Right? You see, there's this other kind of thing. It's not, I'm not suing you back, I'm not fighting by the same rules, and I'm not allowing you to determine who I am. Last one. If they ask you to go 1 mile, then go 2. This is based on a Roman law for soldiers. So any territory that they overtook, a Roman soldier was allowed to walk up to a citizen at any point. They may be carrying these heavy sacks or whatever. I could walk up to a Roman citizen could walk up to someone who's not a Roman citizen in a land they've conquered, and they say, carry my pack. And by law, they could make you carry it for 1 mile. And so this is a very common kind of situation they'd be familiar with. And Jesus says, so if someone comes up and says, carry this for 1 mile, carry it 2. They see, if I ask you to carry the mile, I'm looking down on you, right? Here, you're kind of my workhorse. Here, take this for me. I'm going to make you carry it. You know, I'm tired. My back hurts. Here, carry this for me. If you take it and we get to 1 mile, and now by law, I have to get that back from you. And you go, no, I got it. I'm going to keep going. And you keep walking. Now suddenly, the thing I'm too tired to carry, that I'm too weak to carry, you're like, no big deal, I got 2 miles. And I'm outside of the jurisdiction of the law of what I'm allowed to make you do. That puts me in a weird position as a Roman soldier. You're kind of making me break the law. Now you're doing it willingly, but now I'm kind of walking behind you, kind of feeling a little insecure about who I am in this entire situation that I've built up, right? I mean, you almost have this kind of farcical scene of like a Roman soldier walking behind someone. Can I have that back, please? No, please, you've done enough. Right. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, but I tell you, if they slap you on this cheek, give them this cheek. If they sue you for this, give them everything. If they tell you to walk 1 mile, walk 2. And now it's the soldier that's nervous. Now I'm the one that's strong and not bothered. Now I'm the one that can keep going, right? This is an active and disruptive kind of loving response. It's this kind of constant posture that remains no matter what has been done to me, no matter how a person tries to exert force over me, define who I am. No matter what a person's done to me, my posture remains the same. It is a love that refuses to dehumanize. I'm not going to hit you back and try and beat you down. But it also refuses to be dehumanized. That's really, really important. It's an active, disruptive love that refuses to dehumanize, but it also refuses to be dehumanized. That second part can be really hard for us sometimes. These are the parameters we operate in, no matter what you do or what you say the rules of the game are. You don't get to determine who I am or how I act. We talked last week about the bridging of the gap between love of God and love of neighbor in those first kind of parts of the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus is equating my horizontal relationships with my vertical relationships and not allowing me to be right with God and not okay with my neighbor, right? And remember, Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. All the laws hang on these things. And so we talked about the combining of those, but there's that love your neighbor as yourself, and I think that's part of what's happening here. No, I don't answer violence with violence. No, I don't act like the world acts. Yes, I love my enemy as I love myself. I do not allow myself to be dehumanized. I'm reminded of one of my favorite quotes from a book called Jesus and the Disinherited by Howard Thurman. He's a big influence on Martin Luther King Jr., my understanding is, and if you read his book, you can kind of see right where a lot of the civil disobedience and stuff that took place in the civil rights era, which is straight from the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, it's why it's so powerful, why those images still stay with us, because they actually acted out what Jesus said to do. And Howard Thurman says this, he, that's Jesus, recognized with authentic realism that anyone who permits another to determine the quality of his inner life gives into the hands of the other the keys to his destiny. Anyone who permits another to determine the quality of his inner life gives into the hands of the other the keys to his destiny. If a man knows precisely what he can do to you or what epithet he can hurl against you in order to make you lose your temper or your equilibrium, then he can always keep you under subjugation. It is a man's reaction to things that determines their ability to exercise power over him. I'm going to read that one more time because that's a heavy quote to me. Jesus recognized with authentic realism that anyone who permits another to determine the quality of his inner life gives into the hands of the other the keys to his destiny. If a man knows precisely what he can do to you or what epithet he can hurl against you in order to make you lose your temper, your equilibrium, then he can always keep you under subjection. If a man's reaction to it is a man's reactions to things that determines their ability to exercise power over him. It's one of those beautiful parts of what I see Jesus doing here. It's not just a loving of the enemy, it's also a love of self. It's also a determination to be known as a beloved child of God, to act as a beloved child, and not allow to be treated any way anything other than that. I will not allow you to define me. I will not allow you to control me. That is not passivity that allows a system of death to go unchallenged. It is not what this is. It is not a passivity that allows the systems of death to determine how the fight will be fought. It is a resolute love that demands both a Christ-like love of neighbor and self. A great conversation with a friend yesterday that talked about how they're just kind of learning this idea that they should actually treat themselves the way God calls them to treat other people. I said, if I'd seen someone else treat someone the way I've treated myself, I'd want to fight them. It demands I love my enemy like Christ and that I give myself the same grace. It says you are the beloved child of God, but so am I. And those are my parameters that I always walk within. You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And then down to verse 48, it says, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And now don't let that last phrase get you hung up. In my tradition, we use that to basically remove ourselves from having to follow any of this stuff that Jesus taught. We say, there you go. See, it says be perfect like God is perfect. We can't be that perfect. So all this is really doing is trying to remind us how bad we are so that we know how dependent on God's grace we are, you know, all those kind of things. So, but you don't have to actually like kind of listen to this. You know, be perfect like God is perfect. It's one of those things that makes you go, okay, I'll just ignore everything before that because obviously I can't do this. A better translation, a more helpful translation of that is complete. Be complete, therefore, as your Heavenly Father is complete. It's not talking about some kind of moral perfection, some kind of purity that we attain because we are so holy. It's about being complete. It's about giving something the time and the space to become what is intended to be, to let something become fulfilled. In fact, if you remember in 1 John 4, it tells us that when we love one another, God's love is in us and God's love is made complete in us. When we receive love from God, and then when we give that same kind of love, the same kind of love that God gave to us, we give to other people, then God's love is made complete, perfect. The completeness is found when we steadfastly love each other as we have been loved. And how have we been loved? God has loved us in this way, that while we were still sinners, while we were still enemies, God gave everything for us. So how does this look for us today? We don't live in Rome. We don't have soldiers asking us to walk a mile. And the answer is, I don't entirely know. I mean, I think the beauty of these teachings is there's a million different manifestations for it. Again, certainly we've seen in the civil rights movement and those kind of things, people who would stand in front of fire hoses, be attacked by dogs, get things poured on their head when they're sitting at a lunch counter, and refuse to play by the rules, refuse to believe the indignity that they're told, and the lack of dignity they're told that they should have. There's a lot of different ways people are trying to do that today. Unfortunately, most of the time, a lot of time it ends up getting into violence, which of course undoes everything. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I do know this. If it is of Christ, it will not be passive, it will not be violent, and it will not dehumanize anyone, including yourself. It will not be passive, it will not be violent, and it will not dehumanize anyone. That includes the victim and the victimizer. And that's a really good place to start as you begin to examine this third way of Jesus. A good way to kind of get a feel for whether or not what you want to participate in or what you're feeling like you want to do is a good idea or not. Does it contain violence? And I don't just mean physical violence. That can be emotional. It can be otherwise. Does it dehumanize anyone involved? And if the answer to that question is yes, then it may be effective and it may feel even great to participate in it. It's just not Christ's kingdom. Because it does not extend the unconditional love of Christ to our own hearts and our own bodies, and it does not extend the unconditional love of Christ to the hearts and hands of those that we just as soon hate. So can we navigate this third way? Again, especially right now in the politics of things, everyone's kind of, we're out here. We all feel very strongly about what we feel strongly about. I would bet if we took a poll, almost everyone in this room probably feels like they've got more enemies right now than they felt like they had a year ago. Maybe not. Maybe it's just me. There's something to strongly consider. In our families, in our community, in our workplaces, on our social media, in our politics, may we be people of the third way. May we refuse to mirror the violence and hatred that is shown to us. May we refuse to be defined by any voice other than our Creator's. May we respond to all that is said and done with the loving confidence of God and being God's beloved child. Let's pray. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I want to remind you of a couple of announcements. Remember again, the Hawkins Science Fair, if you want to be a part of that, let Sharon or Caroline know. If you want to sign up for Ecclesia t-shirts, or actually there's another sign up out there for a hike I forgot about. So if you want to be a part of a contemplative hike, that's out there as well. Don't forget Ash Wednesday service on March 1st. And don't forget that survey that's going out if you want to take that and get that back to us. Let me say this real quick. I totally skipped this in the notes, and I want to make sure I say it very specifically because I think it's important. When we talk about the idea of what Jesus is teaching not being about passivity, while also not being about violence and responding, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, a lot of times these verses have been used to keep people in very abusive situations. And they've been used to justify telling a wife to stay with a husband who's abusive or whatever. I understand that to love someone as a child of God and to love yourself as the child of God you are sometimes means walking away. And certainly in that case, that is that situation. Again, this is not about passivity. This is not about just laying down and being run over. This is about treating people as they are, which is the child of God, but also establishing who you are as a child of God and demanding that someone treats you accordingly. So may we wrestle. These are deep, hard ideas, guys. This is not easy stuff. I could talk a lot longer about it, and we still would probably not get any closer to the difficulty of trying to figure out how to do it. But may we be a people of the third way. Let's not mirror what this world has and just put Jesus' name on it. There's enough people playing that game. May we not just sit by idly and passively and let the world happen. May we actively love as Christ loved, and may we demand the humanity of all that we are around, including ourselves. May we be people of the third way. Peace be with you.
And also with you.
Have a great week.